I'm grateful to God for the partnership with HRBC. I was so encouraged to hear 10% of your gift has come to us, and God has greatly blessed the work in Kankuntla School, and now the church construction also is going on, and so we are very encouraged for the partnership. I think this is the fourth time I'm here, and so thankful to God for the friendship we have with the church leaders and church members and several families we have partnered together. We are thankful to God for the open door God has given us in India, and I request your prayers continually. I don't know what future holds for us, but we are very excited for the time God has given us. On 16th, when I left, left India for coming here, was the general election announcement day, and the Bharatiya Janata Party, BJP, got the full majority in the parliament, and many, many Christians and Dalits and other minorities are very, very scared. Many Christians have prayed throughout this year, fasting and prayed that they won't come in power, but God has chosen that they come in power. So we don't know what the future holds. Every state they ruled, Christians, workers, missions have been severely attacked. Last year, in the state of Karnataka, one small state they were ruling, they had 400 attacks on Christians in 1 year in that state. So you can imagine the challenge nationally when the government is going to be fully in their hands. So pray that God will continue to give His grace to people. I'm not frightened because the gospel is preached not in power but in weakness, and the glory of God is exhibited in human weakness. And so when we are weak, we are strong in Christ. And so continue to pray for OM and several other missions who are working in India, and pray that God will continue to give His grace to us. Now, the portion given to me is 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 to 4 that I'm going to read before you from New International Version. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 to 4. Paul writes there, "Now about the collection of God's people, do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Then when I arrive, I will give letters of introduction to the man you approve and send them with your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable for me to go also, they will accompany me." It's great to preach here. I'm also a little scared with Dr. Tony Sargent here. 30 years ago when I joined OM, Dr. Tony was speaking in OM conference. And so I've kept in touch with him last 30 years, and greatly honored to be his friend. And Brother Tony has helped our mission and ministry so much in India spiritually, materially, and prayer-wise, and encouraging Bible teaching and every way. And so I'm a little humbled that he's sitting there and I'm speaking in the pulpit. We are so thankful, Brother Tony, for standing with us all these years. Paul, when he wrote about this to 1 Corinthians, it was not an easy time. There was some tension between Paul and the church, and the relationship was a little tense, and during those time, there are several sensitive issues Paul addresses in the letter to 1 Corinthians, and along with that, he also addresses the issue of giving. If this verse starts with "now," about the collection of God's people, and so the language points out that this is one of the issue Corinthians had asked Paul about. If you notice, in first six chapters, Paul mentions the issues that he had heard about from people. The people who visited the church, and from church families, he had heard about the problems of division, of sexual immorality, court cases, tensions in the church. And so he had heard about some of these issues, and he's addressing those issues from 1 to 6th chapter. Then 7th chapter onwards, Paul is addressing the issues that Corinthians had written to him about. 1 Corinthians 7:1, Paul says, "Now about the issues you have written to me about." And so from then on, he talks about marriage, food sacrifice to idols, freedom in the Christian life, family, marriage, Lord's Supper, spiritual gifts, and resurrection. And so you must have noticed all those things because your church is going through these things. But this verse also shows that one of these issues that they had asked him about was of offering to God's work. And it's very beautiful when people ask about this. You know, as a pastor, I don't have many experiences where people come and ask me about giving, saying, "Brother, teach us about giving, or tell me how much I should give." No, people don't talk about it. So with all their weaknesses, I honor Corinthians that they wrote to Paul about the collection, about the offering, saying, "Teach us, tell us about this." Offering or giving on a whole, the church does not talk about it. Partly, I think, because Jesus is teaching on Matthew 6:3 that what the right hand does, the left hand doesn't know. And as a result, somehow we have got an impression that it's a very secret thing. So we never talk about it. About giving is a very private thing. Nobody knows what I give. Now that's a very beautiful thing for the glory of God. But unfortunately, God also doesn't get the glory because people don't tell or share about or talk about giving. You know, do you realize in the Bible there are 500 verses on the issue of prayer, they say. Another important subject of faith, there are another 500 verses in the Bible. But on the issue of giving, there are 2,000 verses on how to handle possessions, how to handle the wealth God has given us. 2,000 verses are on that. Out of 38 parables Jesus gave, 16 parables talk about possessions. You know, so you realize Jesus and the scripture gives enormous importance to the issue of giving, on handling money. And so I think it's an important thing that we talk openly about giving. While there is a verse about secret giving, there is also another verse that talks about letting other people know our good deeds. In Matthew 5:16, Jesus says, "Let your light shine before men so that they see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." And giving is definitely one of the good deeds Christians do, isn't it? Giving is one of the great service God's people do. And if they don't talk about it, don't mention or discuss this, I think a lot of God's people will not learn this. The problem in giving and talking about is a bragging. And that is, of course, wrong. All of us know that. If somebody is bragging about their giving, we are never encouraged. We are never excited about it. But if somebody sincerely shares how sacrificially they help God's work, surely all of us will be encouraged. I've heard about some great people in the world, some businesses, some Christian workers, some people have given for God's work, and I'm very encouraged. I'm always challenged. When I hear a lot of people don't give tithe, they give 20%, 40%, 50% of their income for God's work. Some people only keep 10% for themselves and give 90% out. I'm very encouraged by that, you know. But somehow people talk. God is known as a giving God, right? If you read Bible and if you look at the universe, you don't miss this, that God is a giving God. He had only one son and he gave him for us, you know. The sacrifice, the goodness of God is seen in his giving. And that is not secret. Everything God has given is open for the world. And everything happened in the early church also. A lot of things were known. You know, Luke mentions openly that a lot of people sold their lands and houses and gave to God. Barnabas is mentioned by name, that Barnabas brought his gift and gave. He sold his land and gave to God, to the church. And that is mentioned particularly. No, and it encourages us. When we see the giving of God's people, it always encourages us. It will be great, I think, if people of God learn to talk about giving and give example to others on how we can give. It directly fights against the desire to be selfish, to hold on to what we have. And so, like many other Christian virtues and principles, if people are able to share what God has given them and how they are sharing with others, I think will greatly help. We do notice when we stay with people how generous they are, how hospitable they are, how many people, missionaries and others, visit their homes, and they help. Definitely encourages many other people to do the same. My parents were very generous. We lived in a small village in Gujarat, and there was no church in our village. Only once a month, a pastor used to come to our house and stay for 2-3 days during the weekdays and teach us children Bible and then tell some Bible stories, and we talk about Christian things. That was only once a month we had Christian experience. But several evangelists, missionaries passing through that area will come and stay in our house. And even though we never got to go to church in those early years, we heard so much about Bible, and I wanted to become a missionary from childhood. You know, even before I gave my life to Jesus, I wanted to become a missionary, because I saw these workers sacrificing their life, giving up everything for God and going out, you know, greatly encouraged my soul. I thought the wealth and the possession and business, I mean, there is nothing if I can give my life for the service of God. So two of our siblings out of four are in full-time service. And God has greatly blessed our family because of my parents' generous hospitality and helping the people of God. And so I wish in Christian church we will be able to discuss the issue of giving openly and discuss and talk about it in our Bible studies and meetings, so that others will be able to trust God and give. Paul, that's why nicely encourages people about the collection that Corinthians wrote to them. Here also Paul gives example of Galatians. If you read Galatians, you will see he gives the example of Corinthians. If you read Corinthians, he gives the example of Galatians. So Paul also used this giving example of giving churches. No, he didn't keep it secret. He gave the example of giving churches. Actually, Galatian churches, he said they were incredibly helping. Out of their poverty they gave, and Paul says he was blamed for robbing churches because he took so much money from these churches for mission. But Galatians gave out of their great generosity. They said they pleaded with Paul, saying, "Please allow us to help you in your mission trip." And so amazing how Paul gave their example to so many churches to help them giving. So I pray that God will also give us that boldness and humility to share with others what God has given us. Paul, secondly, in second verse, encourages them to give systematically. You know, he says now instead of giving whenever somebody visits and have a special collection, which is good. Many times we do special collection. It's also very important, he says, that every first day of the week, which was a church Sunday, that each one of you set aside some money. The second issue that we can see here is that giving should be a part of a settled principle and not just out of impulse. In some meetings, in some places, we see the story, hear thing, and our hearts are moved. But on the whole, it's very healthy to decide to give on a settled principle regularly, so that we are able to continue helping in mission. It's very interesting, in 2008, when the financial crisis hit the world over, the giving was the first thing that affected. Lots of mission had to cut their mission giving because their giving had gone down. The income had not gone down of many people, but somehow I was told people were so scared they stopped giving. They were not sure of the economy and future. They were holding on to what they had, and the mission giving was greatly, greatly affected. You know, the mission organization and the ministries cannot continue if this kind of things happen. Because on average giving, they build the missions. They recruit missionaries, they start projects, and when this goes down, it gets severely affected. And that's why I think all of us, my family also has to decide what to give, no matter what happens, whatever issue we go through. If we make a decision in the fear of God that this is what we give, we will give. Paul also gives example, encouragement in second verse that each one of us give. This is also beautiful. Not only those who have money, not only those who have extra money and don't know what to do with it, but each one of us that we give. I wish also that the rich will be able to give as much as poor. I've heard the opposite, but now after living with poor for many, many years, I've realized that often rich poor give more than the rich. Very interestingly, in Jesus' example also, Jesus magnified this old widow who had given 2 mites, small coins, and Jesus said she has given more than all of them. Partly also, Dr. Tony this morning was telling me that it's not what you give, but what you don't give creates a tension. The issue is what we don't give. And so it's important that we learn to give no matter what we have. Each one of us, God expects each one of us to share with others what God has given us. If you read Bible, like many other principles, this giving is not taught why we should do that. You know, it's taken for granted. Like Jesus, when he's preaching in Matthew chapter 6, 2, verse 2, he says, when you give. Okay, so he's just taking it for granted that you're going to give. You know, so Bible doesn't give us a reason why we should give. Like he said, when you pray, when you fast, so he doesn't give us an example why we should pray. Partly also because I think it's one of the, giving is one of the law written in the hearts of man. It seems like that way because people of all religion give. You know, every religion I have noticed that giving is part of their virtue. Like prayer. No, prayer is not just a Christian thing. Prayer is all religions practice prayer. Somehow it is written in the heart of man, the law of, written in the hearts of man, that they want to offer prayer to the Almighty. And giving also is similar, that everybody wants to give. And so that is taken for granted in the Bible, that we give, each one of us, from what God has given us, that we give. I think some time ago I visited here, and I probably shared a story of a lady who attends my church. There is a widow from a very, very poor family. Her husband is dead when she was very young, and one son she has. Husband was a drunkard, beat her every day, didn't do any work. She had to earn money and look after the son. And the son grew up and became worse than the father, and he also will beat his mother. And I was wondering when I looked at her, her grandchildren were coming to church, and because of that, she also started coming to church and gave her life to Jesus and was baptized. And amazing faith she showed in God. I was surprised because she could not read Bible. And the only knowledge of God she had was what was taught in the church every Sunday. And so she will come faithfully to the church and learn and go back. Once I was preaching on giving, and I was talking to the church that the true giving is not real giving until it hurts you. You know, if you have plenty and you give, what is so great about it? But when you give what you need and you give to others because you love and care for others, that is a sacrifice, and that is a very precious giving. And at the end of the church, she came and said, Pastor, Jesus talked to me, spoke to me today, and I have put 100 rupees in the offering bag. And I was very shocked. 100 rupees was her 2-3 days of work money, you know. And I said, no, you should not have given that much money. Why did you give such a gift? And she says, well, Jesus told me, and you mentioned that if it doesn't hurt me, it's not a real giving. you know. And I was so surprised, because when I spoke that, I was thinking of some other people, not her, you know. Pastors have this weakness that when they preach, they keep somebody in mind. But somehow God spoke to her. After a month, I was preaching on forgiveness. And I said, you are not true Christian if you cannot forgive. Forgiveness is a central theme of Christianity. And Jesus taught in Lord's Prayer also, we prayed that if we can't forgive, then we are not forgiven. You know, the sign of me forgiven by God is that I can forgive others. If I am forgiven mountain of sins from God and I hold on to my brother or sister one thing against them, then there is a serious doubt whether I am forgiven or not. And then she came to me after the church service and saying, Pastor, this is the most difficult thing you have told me. She says, my greatest enemy is my own son, who drinks, who beats up, does not allow me to look after children. His wife has ran away. I am looking after four children in this poverty. And I wish my son will go away, be arrested, disappear, die. I don't care what happens. But today you are telling me if I cannot forgive, I cannot be a true disciple of Jesus. So please pray for me that I'll be able to forgive. You know, second time I again almost told her this preaching was not for you. Forget what I said. And I mean, I also hate your son, you know. But you can't do this against your own preaching. And so I said, okay, ma'am, I pray for you that God will give you grace. This is the most difficult thing. I have done it also in my life to ask forgiveness or forgive somebody. But I pray that God will give you grace. You know, this kind of people really challenge my faith. I somehow realize that they do outgive us. They do outgive, they do for God, which many, many powerful, rich people are unable to do. I'm sometimes afraid, looking at other religion also, that maybe Christians don't give as much as non-Christians. I don't know about the UK, but USA, one survey says, even though USA gives 80% of mission giving around the world, you know, in USA itself, they said, a survey says that on average, church-going Christians give 2% of their income for God's work. You know, only 2%. No, they don't even give tithe, even though New Testament doesn't have a teaching on tithe, and you are supposed to give more than tithe. But that is the situation in America. I don't know what is the situation here in Britain or other countries, but this is a problem. I think that many people who claim to follow Jesus give less than the people in other religions, and I really struggle with this. In our churches, we teach that principle. Two things we teach them, you know, because many are poor. I tell them that it's not possible to live with 100% God gives you. You know, your income is not enough. You have so many expenses, medical, education, and just putting food on the table. There is no table also. But you cannot live with 100%, but you can live with 90%, I tell them. You know, which is very strange. 100% is not enough for my family, but I give 10% or more to God. 90% is enough for me because God will bless what is left over. You know, the second thing we teach them is that everything God gives me is not for me. You know, this is very, very important for every Christian to learn. Somehow we think it's mine, I have it, I earned it because God gave me, you know, and don't touch it. God gave this to me. Well, everything God gives me is not for me. You know, God gives me so that I will be able to share with others. You know, if Christians don't reach out and touch people, many people will not know there is God. If Christian people don't give generously, sacrificially, their own lives, their possessions, most people in the world will not realize there is God. You know, there is preaching, there is distribution of scripture, there are so many other spiritual activities. But I realize that if Christians don't sacrificially go and help people, they won't know. This is one of my story I have shared in other places, but in the south of India we have a very strange system of temple prostitution, where families offer their daughter, mostly Dalit families offer their daughter as a sacrifice to the temple, and the daughter is married to the god in the temple. So technically she becomes the wife of a god in the temple, wife of God in the temple. Devdasi, she is called the servant of God. She lives in the temple, looks after her husband, which is God. In practice, she becomes a prostitute because the priest and all the people who come to the temple live with her. In few years' time, she gets HIV positive or other venereal diseases, and she is kicked out of the temple, and then another wife is found for God. And this continues the system. And there are thousands of women suffering in life because of this strange system. Our church, a few years ago, one of our churches, pastors started working with them, and few of them came to Christ. When they are kicked out of the temple, they have few children, nobody knows who is their father, and they are living in a very, very poor areas, and there is no income. They have to just go and do some daily labor, and whatever they can get, they survive on. And then often their children are sold again in the market, and it just goes on. So when I saw one of the reports of our church pastors, I was so surprised that some of them have come to Christ. And so I wrote to the pastor, said, I would love to come and visit your church. And he says, yeah, please come, brother, we'll be so encouraged to see you. So I went to visit the church, and on Sunday I went there and started, I was attending the first church service, and I was preaching. And during the preaching, I asked a rhetorical question: have you experienced that God is alive? You know, you have heard about God, you read about God, but do you have a personal experience that He's alive, God? You know, and one lady in the middle of the message stood up and saying, sir, I have experience. I said, okay, go ahead. So I stopped preaching. She shared her testimony, saying her son was sick in the village, 2-year-old son, and the pastor was visiting the village, and she saw him and saying, who are you? You are a stranger here. I've never seen you. She said, I'm a pastor and I pray for the sick. And she said, my son is sick. Why don't you pray for him? And so pastor prayed for the son, and my son was healed. So she said, I was so touched, and I put my faith in Jesus. And last 1 year, very faithfully, I'm coming to the church. I said, sister, thank you very much. I'm so encouraged that you have experienced the love of Jesus. And then I continued preaching. The pastor later told me that she is one of the former temple prostitute. And so I said, can I talk to her after the service? So after the church service, I met her. She spoke Kannada language, which I don't speak. The pastor had to translate for me. Her name was Shobha. She had 3 children. One girl was 8-year-old. One boy was 6-year-old. And one little boy about 2-year-old. She was HIV positive, and our church was helping her for the treatment. And other 2 children, the 8-year-old girl and 6-year-old boy, were okay. But the youngest one, 2-year-old boy, was HIV positive also. And Shobha was very happy. She wanted to take a picture with me standing with her. She asked the pastor if I can go to her house. And she would bring 2-3 other temple prostitutes and other neighbors. And if I can share the same message I shared in the church. And I said, I would love to do that. So we went to her house, and she had a small hut. And about 7-8 people came to her house, and then we sat on the ground, and I opened my Bible and I started preaching again. We were all sitting in a circle, and she was sitting in front of me with her small 2-year-old boy playing in her lap. And then her 8-year-old girl was sitting next to me on one side, and her 6-year-old boy was sitting on the other side. And then we started preaching. When I was preaching, both children started coming closer, and then they wanted to sit close to me and touch me. You know, the untouchables have this great desire to touch others. And so I'm untouchable also, so I love touch. I continued preaching. After a while, this 8-year-old girl decided to take my hand in her lap. You know, so I was sitting like that and I was preaching. Then her brother saw that, and so he also decided to take my hand. And so I lost both hands. Preachers need hands to preach. After a while, this girl took my hand and put it against her chest and holding it very tightly, you know. And then her brother saw that, so he also did that. So after a while, I was sitting like that and preaching. I thought it was very funny. And suddenly, I realized that these children don't have a father. You know, I have two children. My daughter is 21 now, and my son is 18. And I remember when my girl, first day, I put her in the school. She cried so much, and she didn't want to leave my hand. And I was so angry with the whole education system and the teachers and the school. I said, why does he need to go to school? You know, and I almost brought her back. And the teacher said, it's okay, sir. All children do that. Leave her. Go back. And two hours she sat in the school. I could not go home. I sat there waiting, peeping through the window, saying, is she all right? Is she crying? And now I'm holding on to two children who were holding my hands and had never experienced a father's love. And suddenly I started choking. I couldn't preach anymore, you know. And everybody was looking at me. I had already preached this passage in the church. It should be easy. Don't even have to look at notes if you have preached. But suddenly I realized that preaching is not just giving great ideas to people. You know, I suddenly asked myself, what is the good news? What am I preaching here? This woman sitting before me is going to die in a few years' time because of AIDS. That small baby sitting in her lap is going to die. They have no father. These two children are going to be left uncovered. Will this girl holding my hand going to be a temple prostitute? Will this son be sold in the child labor and never again see the joy and happiness in their life? You know, I started crying while I was preaching. And I told the pastor, I'm sorry, I cannot preach anymore. And we prayed and literally ran away from there. That night I was sleeping in the train and we were going, I was going to other city. And I was so upset with God. No, I was crying and I said, God, no wonder most of the world don't believe in you. There are thousands of temple prostitutes. I have only seen one of them. And I can't handle it. How can you handle this? Why so much injustice? Why so much suffering? No wonder people complain that there is no God, or if God is there, he's dead, or he can't hear, he's sleeping. You know? I said, what a helpless situation to sit before people. They think I have some good news for them and I have nothing to share except cry and feel helpless and go away. God spoke to me in the train that night and said, Moses, thank you for representing me. He said, you're right. Most of the world doesn't believe in me because they have never seen me. They think I'm not there or I don't care. That's why it was a very precious thing for you to hold the hands of those two children who don't have father, to let them know that I'm still there and I care for them. Thank you for assuring that woman, even though you have no answers for her life, showing her that you care, you know. Maybe she will look at you and think, God is there. These people care, so their God also must be caring for us. That's why he has sent them to us. He said, when you were holding those children's hands, I was holding their hands. And I said, I'm sorry, God, I was very upset with you. Please send me. Let my heart also break with the things that break your heart. Let me go and help and do this. I don't have this energy. I don't know how I'll handle this suffering, you know, because I don't have a heart like you. But I want to do this. You know, I want to tell the world that God is alive. You know, I realize if church was not there in this world, the world will not think God is there. You know, even though a lot of atheists complain about church and complain about the hypocrisy and all the scandals in the church. You know, if the church, with all weakness, if church was not there, the world will not know there is God. I was talking to Dr. Tony about a book called God is Back. If you get hold of that book, written by two atheist editors of Economic Times, New York Economic Times. Their theory was in 60s God died. And if God died, religion cannot survive without God. So by 2000, religion also will disappear from the face of the earth. Two greatest forces modernism and science will destroy religion and God from this earth. 2000 is gone. In 2010, they decided, let's go back and survey the world to see what has happened to the faith. And they were very, very shocked. And as a result, they wrote a book called God is Back. You know, they realize that God is not dead anymore and religion is not dead. Actually, religion is much stronger than 60s. They realize that there are more people believing in God than ever before in the world. You know, they are talking about all religion, not just Christianity. But they said Christianity is the most powerful. I mean, they have done an amazing survey going all continents and most major countries they have visited and saw how the faith is growing. And they said one reason Christianity cannot be defeated because of their giving, because of their sacrifice. Christians go in the most difficult places. If white people, the last place white people should go is the Middle East countries. And you have so many missionaries there. Americans should never go to some of these Afghanistan, Iraq and others countries. You will find so many people there. Some of the places, most difficult places to go, women missionaries are going. Even men there don't dare to go. Women missionaries are going there. They can be raped. They can be killed. They can disappear. Nobody will know what happened. But nobody can stop the church from doing good. And the world cannot handle it. They said Christianity will continue to grow and become very strong faith in this world because of their giving, because of their sacrifice, because of their stubbornness to go in the most difficult places in this earth. When that happens, the world will definitely know that God is alive and there. It's my prayer that God will continue to give us grace and help so that we are able to exalt Him and tell the world that He is alive. Thank you so much.